It is literally just a couple of days after the AdTech Economic Forum, which was such a blast, and it was so many good conversations, good things. But all I have to tell you is that from almost the minute it started, I was getting messaging about whether what people agreed with and disagreed with on stage. And so I thought I would bring two of the people that were messaging me, Michael Sullivan and Paul Bannister, to have a conversation about what we felt about the event. And here's what I'm going to tell you. We start talking about billions of dollars, and then we wind up talking about aspects of a bid request. So we cover it all on the next Bieler Cast. Friday afternoon after the big AdTech Economic Forum. So I'm running on vapors. I think, but at the same time, I think we're all looking at this, the end of this particular week with this particular event, third-party cookies. I mean, hopefully we get out of this whole podcast is Paul giving more predictions that I can invest our money into and whatever. But let's, I'm getting ahead of myself. I'm getting ahead of myself. Let's start off with the fact that I've got, when the conference kicked off, okay, the AdTech Economic Forum, immediately going on to Twitter, were a couple of comments of, I've got thoughts on what's being said on screen. And I was like, guys, we've got to have a podcast around this. And so I've asked Michael Sullivan and Paul Bannister to join me. Gentlemen, there is a chance that someone listening to this podcast doesn't know what you do. And so I would love to just get that out of the way so we can kind of dive in. Mike, why don't we go to you first? Introduce yourself.
Sure. Yeah. My name's Michael Sullivan. I'm the co-founder and CEO of Sincera. I've worked my entire professional career in digital advertising and ad tech. And yeah, I'm passionate about what we do because I find it very interesting.
Okay. Paul.
Hey everyone, I'm Paul Bannister. I'm the Chief Strategy Officer of Raptive. I've also been working in digital ads and programmatic and ad tech for nearly my entire career. Background real quick on the company, because I think it's important sometimes. Raptive is a publisher representative. We run the ads for about 5,000 websites, which has gotten us a lot of scale and a lot of information about the larger ecosystem. And I thought it was a great conference, and I'm excited to talk about it.
Yeah, well let's talk like from there. Again, it was for me, it realized, and it's true that we did just come up with this and kick this off for like 100 days ago, and that creates all sorts of challenges, I can tell you from the event perspective. But we put on a show, and I feel like there we've gotten great response. Paul, I'm going to call you out. You did talk about sitting too long. What was your take, Paul, on the overall show? And then we'll get into the details of the sessions and the content.
Yeah. I mean, like I said, at a high level, I thought it was great. I thought it was very interesting. I thought it was not the usual stuff that we all go to, which was really nice and made it diverse. I will say this is a terrible statement. I'm not a content consumer at conferences. I go to very little of the content as a general point. So this was a bit of a change for me because sounds terrible. Like I had to sit through the content, which again, it was really good and I enjoyed it, but I also find a lot of value in talking and networking and conversations and whatever, which there was time for. But for me, I would have liked a little bit of a shift towards the content, the conversations,
100%.
a little bit away from the content, or making the content, some of the content a little bit more like interactive in some cases.
The sessions, the agenda was extremely aggressive. That was one where I couldn't, and again, so I want to give credit to Tom Ciascari for putting together the right kind of flow. But there is a part where it's almost like you've bought into, if you're gonna go macro to micro and then you can go through the whole chain, that means you got to go through the whole chain. And suddenly you realize it's 6 o'clock and you're like, oh my gosh, right? Like it, so that it was a lot and it was a fire hose. So I think I feel like on stage I gave thing more conversation would have been good. I agree with that. I think V2 will be really good in that respect. I have one other comment, then Mike, I want to hear what you have to say, which is, there were people who were attending and sitting and watching the content that I can only typically see at conferences where they go, get on stage, do their thing, and then immediately are escorted out, and that's all they experience. And that was kind of cool for me. That was a little bit of like a little bit of a sweat, kind of a cred thing to be able to sit there and say, I'm gonna name names like Joe Zawatzky sat and watched a lot of content. Brian O'Kelly, they watched a lot of content. I'm like, that's pretty cool. That's pretty cool when you do that. Mike, your thoughts?
Yeah, I agree with Paul. I think the central conceit of the conference was really cool and really interesting. For me personally, starting an ad tech company, I sort of look at it with a different lens because you have to care more and in different ways versus, when you're being just a product manager within an ad tech company, right? It's like it's really interesting to hear. Brian's thoughts, particularly, and the questions he asked around the venture table. It's super interesting to hear the PE perspective, frustrating at times because a lot of publishers out there have sort of gone through these turnarounds. So, to me, it was also just personally felt a little bit like right place, right time for this topic. So, I hope it continues. I'm glad you and Tom put this on. It was great. I like the focus on the economic side of the business versus sort of what is like a lot of kind of jazz hands strategy, right? So yeah, it was great. I really like it. I think it's sufficiently differentiated.
Yeah, I appreciate that. And I think again, we've got a number of ideas around this, and again, we're getting all the feedback on. So that's kind of the event aspect of it. And again, I do feel like there was a gap in the market for this, and yet, for me, it's obviously fascinating because of the focus of my business and how this just didn't really cover those particular pieces, right? And like there was no real talk about journalism here or anything along those lines. It was very much where the money's going to go to create more money. And by the way, that is a fantastic industry and career. And one of the reasons I really want to do this for my own personal gain was to sit there and think, I feel like I make micro moves trying to figure out ad tech. And meanwhile, there's a whole other game being played ahead that if certain companies aren't getting invested in, does this even work, right? Like, so some of those ideas. And so I think that's where I'd love to dive into it, because I think certainly at the beginning of the day, I think really kind of kicked off some ideas and some, like, let's just put it this way, some absolute statements that I think the three of us sit there and look at that and go, like, is that a fair statement to make? Is that something that should go uncontested and so forth? And Mike, I'd love to hear some of the things that sparked for you in terms of those ideas.
I think that is a good summary. I think for me, one of the things that sort of tweaked my spidey sense a bit at the beginning was there was so much talk about the open internet being dead. And like that was one of the things that was sort of like universally confirmed. And Rob, they were talking about you and your business and what you do with publishers. They were just saying that it won't exist. And so so there was this like kind of like very, I wouldn't maybe go as far as to say glib, but it was just sort of this like very reductive, like the open internet is dead. And in the same breath, it's like, well, Disney is a walled garden and NBC is a walled garden. And it's like, what are we talking about here? Like, what is your working definition of a walled garden? And to me, it just felt like it was trying to at times do like the score points at a conference type of energy. Where, like, for me personally, there's a very clear definition of what a walled garden is. You have private ways to buy and measure media that you 100% control, often through like an API or a UI, right? Like, it's and you often own the inventory as well. In most cases, you own the ad supply. So, like, by that definition, like, none of these publishers that I just mentioned qualify. So it felt glib. In one session, everyone's like nodding in the affirmation that the open internet's dead. In the next session, they're saying, oh, actually, the open internet is, 80 billion, in terms of like total TAM, which seems pretty good to me. I'm not saying it's not, depressed in some cases. And then there was just, a ton of talk about like trade desk this and trade desk that. And what was very fascinating to me in a discussion about ad tech economics, no one mentioned the DOJ case against Google this fall that could like have a monstrous impact in the economics of online advertising.
Yeah, that's true. There were a number of things that were kind of excluded from this that again would give that color and something to dive into. Paul, any thoughts on what Mike said, or to any additional thoughts?
I do think I try to spend some chunk of my time thinking about like the macro and the ecosystem and things like that, and so as a general point, like I enjoyed a lot of the conversations because it brought us all up to a higher level of thinking that I think some of us do sometimes, but probably not enough. I think a little bit to the commentary, to Mike's points, which I rolled my eyes as well at like the open internet's dead kind of comments for a variety of reasons. And I think part of it is, on the one hand, we all saw Tom's graphic of like the way $900 billion of ad spend globally and how it breaks down. And it's like huge swaths are eaten by Google and Meta and TikTok and dot, 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 whatever. And then like the open web is this like tiny little thing in the corner. And then there's like CTV, which is growing, that's up there. And there's like, there's some app thing somewhere and whatever, but they're all actually quite small compared to the monsters of the true walled gardens, to Mike's point. But I do think that this is a place where there's a disconnect between the macro and the micro. If I'm a stock analyst and I'm looking at the $900 billion of ad spend, of course it looks to me like the open web is dead and dying because it's this tiny thing in the corner that's under assault from all sides, that is a giant pain in the neck. And there's only one company that sort of exists in that space that is good, which is Trade Desk. And the others are all, again, from a stock analyst perspective, like PubMatic and Magnite are the other two big ones. And they're quote unquote tiny in the grand scheme of things, which, from their perspective is true. But I think this is where understanding the micro of like the web and the open internet in general is helpful to understand. I think Mike and his company, and I think our company, have a very good perspective on what our ecosystem looks like. And I said it on stage, I think that it is distinctly possible that the web will shrink, but it's because I think it has shrunk, but I think it's shrinking in good ways that are getting rid of the trash and the garbage and the bad things that have like sort of infected it over time. And what will remain will be a much stronger shell and seed for actual growth. So again, from a stock analyst perspective, they're like, what's a stupid little thing on the bottom right-hand corner that I don't care about? But I think from the inside, you look at it and you're like, actually, this thing is getting into very good condition to be something better. Now, could it get blown up by Google or somebody because they snapped their fingers? Absolutely. But it does feel like the micro conditions are actually moving in a better direction that the big time analysts are never going to see.
I think the micro and macro is a very interesting way to frame it. I remember thinking, watching some of the earlier conversations, particularly the public markets one, and it was very interesting for two reasons. One is it was very clearly, Paul, as you mentioned, like these analysts anchor on these monster walled gardens and everything in comparison is small. And it's like, yeah, that's definitely true, but that small, it's only small in comparison to like, the Ozymandias of these monster walled gardens. And so like, to me, it was just like, that seemed like an obvious fallacy. Like, I think an $80 billion market is very interesting. So much so that we, started a company to measure and understand it. But, so I definitely, I am biased in that way for sure. So that's sort of point one. And then point two, and I give some credit, but like this can happen in a lot of conferences. It's like the general format, particularly for like, roundtables, does not really lend itself to sort of like being able to state, I'm not really sure, or hedge, or I want to understand that. The structure is basically tilted towards absolute statements. And so there was this energy where if you're anchored on these walled gardens, it's like, these walled gardens are huge. The open internet's, effed. And it's like, all right, everyone pack up and go home. And it's like, okay, sure. But you're only looking at things retroactively. If you're a financial analyst, you're looking at quarterly statements and then sort of reverse engineering or transposing the strategy going forward from those things, right? So it's like, you can only tell us where we've been. You can't tell us where we're going. And that's very much a jump ball.
Agreed.
I feel, go ahead, Paul, were you?
No, I just said agreed, that's it.
Yeah, I think, and I think that there's a part of it when you look at, for the majority of our businesses in that small little segment, that little corner, the corner of the whole thing that, and this, I think, Paul, goes to your point where at a lot of conferences, including mine, where you get to a level of depth and you're sitting there going like, this solution could create 20% lift of your revenue within a publisher, right? And if there are times for us to figure out a way to go, if we could get 1% more on $80 billion, there's a lot that could be done with that, right? And so there's almost a piece of it of going like, fine, thank you for laying out the work. And we're in this corner and now we understand, well, and here's my message to publishers, right? No one's gonna come to save us, right? So it's us, because someone who is sitting there moving billions of dollars around thinks of our area as being small or too small or is gonna die or whatever. They're just not going to look at the nuance of what it is that we do. So we have to make that case, which to me is the interesting part, right? Because I think that, you know, and this ends, you know, with Rashad and making his statement of like, everyone pays attention to all the big players. I would spend more time with the small, crazy, unemployed people because they're the ones that are going to generate the next great thing.
Right.
Right. So I kind of feel like maybe, and again, you know, tell me, guys, please, question, you know,
or in my case, in Ian's case, co-founder, not just the non-employed, the marginally employed. It's like you can pay attention to us there too.
That's right. Oh yeah. I hope it doesn't take unemployment for someone to listen to what I have to say. But there is a part there that, again, it kind of just sat there and painted that particular picture. It is interesting from an event format, again, of the people and the position, you know, again, to my point earlier about sometimes we get right into the weeds at our conferences and it isn't, some of that stuff is literally micro plumbing, if you will, and doesn't add up to really getting our companies to the next level. So I feel like that's a conversation to create and to have. So that, and again, you guys can tell me if the framing is wrong, but if the framing is, let's get 1% next year of that back. Let's claw for it. Where would we take? How do we get from these things? Would be really, really fascinating, right? And at the same time, I kind of feel like we got to make sure we hear this bigger conversation, because again, these are the bigger things kind of in motion. I've been trying to think through this analogy. I do not have this done yet.
Yeah.
You know how you like they play chess and we play checkers. I kind of feel like when you're dealing with that much money, you're playing checkers because each move has a significant impact on the board, and we're playing chess because of the complexity. I'm not saying that we're smarter. We're not. That's not what I'm saying. I'm just saying like there's a part where we are scrambling around with so many little things, when big things are happening above us that could have impact. Because what if people stop investing in the open marketplace? What if someone came out of that conference and is like, yeah, it's dead. I'm going to move money away. That seems like a loss. That seems like a complete mess.
Well, to me, that's, I think, one of the biggest opportunities for the next version of this conference is creating a little bit more of that friction to have positions like that not be unopposed as they rocket by in these conversations at 100 miles an hour.
Yeah.
If someone makes a case that the open internet is dead, and yet at the same time is like then goes on to talk about how big Trade Desk is and how successful this and that is and Jeff Green's strategy, it's like, well, what's going on here, right? So like they are the sort of vanguard. Trade Desk is the vanguard of the open internet simply by market cap, and so like those are incompatible statements. And I think, you know, a great example of having a little bit of like pressure in a very very good way that allows for contemplative events to occur, both for people on the panel and speaking for myself in the audience, was like, I think Brian O'Kelly's panel on VC work, it was one of the only panels that I think had this subtlety. I'm going to invent a term here that I don't think that panel had like second order compliments. Like a lot of the other panels have a latent assumption that the work they do is good and valid, right? Like actually PE is really good because we're doing all of these things and here's what PE does and blah, 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 right? And same with the public markets. And then when Brian's came along, it's like, are we actually like doing this right? Because there's no one particularly youthful in the audience, you know, obviously present company excluded. And there's, you know, there's certainly not a variety in terms of like ethnicities and genders and folks, you know, there's a very heavy bias in one direction. And I don't think you need a spoiler alert to figure out what that is.
Yeah.
Right. So Brian, and he's like, so what are we doing? Like, do we need to do this right? Like, are we actually on the right track with, you know, VC investments in this space? And so, but he did it in a way that wasn't accusatory. It was like, it led to a super interesting conversation.
Right.
So I think like we can bring more of that into the different conversations. Like, is this good? What are we doing bad as private equity? What are we doing well? Like, does this actually lead to awesome outcomes for employees? I think there's a lot of examples recently where that's not the case. Does it lead to awesome outcomes for the open internet, for the walled gardens, for digital advertising? I think it may lead to awesome outcomes for private equity firms. But yeah, I think we should have those conversations because that is the economics of digital advertising.
There's an aspect I will say one thing that was in motion in terms of the event. This is one of the interesting parts of like, if we steer toward the event piece of this, right, is we had hoped at one point, again, it was just a matter of timing to actually have NYU students, you know, have business school students there, right, and actually be a part of it. And again, it was just too little time. But you know, again, not to Brian's point's completely right, right? And I think there's a part of that we all have to kind of acknowledge that one of the aspects of an event is to show what the ideal way of having these conversations should be and what it should look like, right? And I think that's something we all kind of try to aspire to on that front. And at the same time, this is an area that is definitely people, you know, that look like us. So I think that's a part where I know V2 will definitely address that particular issue. But you're
just,
right. I mean, yeah, there is a
just to quickly add one thing, Rob. It's not even an issue with the conference. It's an issue with our industry.
Exactly.
So it's like it's far like the conference is just holding a mirror up to the whole thing, you know. So.
Right. And that's my part is that I try to figure out ways to show what it could be, and at the same time, that's difficult. It's just less to kind of pull from. I thought the youthful thing. I think your point, and again, this is the idea of trying to get true authentic conversations, which again is difficult to get people on stage to get to, right? Is sitting there saying like, yeah, I'm not sure. That was said clearly. There were people who were being honest about those things, but there is an aspect of sitting there going like, there were some absolutes that were probably need to be challenged and good conversation starters. We might have a Mike O'Sullivan meter for the next one.
I can do a lightning round. I made a note on any time I was like, what? My what-o-meter.
Go for it.
A few that jumped out at me because people are messaging me and I don't want to put it on Twitter and put folks on blast, but like, oh, the open internet's dead. A lot of talk about that. You don't need a website anymore. Completely ignoring a company called Shopify that is exploding with growth, that is retailers bringing back their own merchant experience to where? Their website, right? And it's like, you know, like that, just, there's a lot of counter evidence, but we're just moving so fast by some of these statements, right? I think more interestingly, how could a company like Shopify, could Shopify have an Amazon-esque ads business? Right? What would that do to the economics of the open internet, considering they are so open internet focused themselves?
Right.
I think, like, you know, that would be a very interesting topic that, you know, wasn't really explored. Trade Desk has not acquired a company, was another statement. That's not true. They acquired AdBrain. You know, there was a statement about, you know, if you want, it's like, there needs to be consolidation in our space. Okay, sure. People have been saying that for years. Like, I don't think that's, you know, when do we stop saying that? I always have interested.
preaching to the choir.
Although keep going. I want to come back to that. I think that's an important thing. Okay. We keep going on the water meter.
And then the water meter, the last one that I'll say is, you know, there was one statement where it's like, you know, the supply curve explains, you know, like, you know, how can there be, you know, such indirect, like, why is there these SSPs with smaller market caps and then there's only one, like, you know, Trade Desk? Like, why isn't, like, what explains this, like, this delta? Like, it should, like, the point being, the assertion was that there should be equilibrium between both sides. And the point is, it's like, it's seamless for a publisher to use more SSPs and they make more money. And like a customer running campaigns is like very high friction. And plus all your conversion data is in the DSP. So like that's another one that was just, again, we blow by the train station at 100 miles an hour on the locomotion. And it's like, and then we have a conversation with these points as assumptions and facts that are grounding the then conversation. So that was like what was tripping up my what-o-meter. Was when we made a couple of those particular ones. And again, the one that was super big for me was no mention of the Google DOJ case.
Right. Paul, you the what-o-meter triggered something for you. We could see the visceral reaction.
And this sort of, like, you know, kind of hives off from the conference for a minute, but I do think it's an important point that I do wonder. Two connected points. I do wonder if part of the issue of the open web and the open internet has been, broadly speaking, it's been a flat market for a while or growing pretty slowly. And so that means that pretty much everything is a zero-sum game. For me to win, you've got to lose, and vice versa. And that's not good. And then also what has happened is that it's constantly being inundated with new companies, whether it's new publishers trying out some new business model funded by $50 million of VC, or a whole bunch of new ad tech companies doing this, or the 74th SSP, or, you know, whatever. And we're all fighting for this pie that's the same size, and it's just shifting the stuff around. And then also connected to that is the, you know, if I had a dollar for every publisher conference I went to where somebody said, like, we all need to work together and come up with ideas where we can align on them, I'd be like, I'd be a millionaire. Like, you know, I'd be a billionaire. Like, it's
that's up there on with consolidation on the bingo.
Exactly. And so a little bit, like, there is a point in there that is right, that, like, you know, while I agree the consolidation has been said a million times, I'd freaking love for there to be consolidation and for this to get a little cleaned up and a little crisper, where there's a smaller number of companies actually fighting to make the pie bigger and not fighting over the same stupid pie we've been fighting over for the last 15 years.
On the point on, like, the customer or like the sort of ecosystem landscape, I would love, like, I'm very curious to see what is the next visual interpretation of the marketplace. Like, is it going to be logos of ad tech companies and publishers and retailers in this, like, tetrahedron? Like, I don't know what's next. Like, how can this, we are now representing this in 4D space. Like, you know, you cannot conceptualize this without, you know, traveling through a wormhole to understand the nature of the economics and how all these companies interact with each other. Like, all kidding aside, like, I think that, I think there is this, like, this point that we tend to sort of overcomplexify with these visuals when I think they could be simplified. Like, is sort of one point. I think in you don't really need, like, those slides do a really good job, I think, of, like, selling consultative services, because you don't need all of those things to execute, right? Is sort of point one. And I actually think those slides and visuals, again, this was on the what-o-meter, just not a statement, is those slides put companies in boxes. And, like, you know, at Sincera, we would encounter people like, so which box do we put you in here? And it's like, we don't really. What box are you putting Scope 3 in? Like, sometimes these things don't, like, they don't, they, it actually in some ways calcifies what the
No,
market makers
it's the biggest pet peeve of mine right now is everybody wants something unique. I actually believe, as an example, we are unique, and then no one can understand what we are. Because it's
Yeah.
like, and it's like, well, then you don't want something unique. Like, how do I just figure out the other thing I should be?
Yeah, I think it's more interesting to frame it as like, what problems are these companies solving? And then you can sort of do it, right? Because like, what is a DSP? Like, Trade Desk has OpenPath, right? Criteo has all these direct integrations plus these retailers. Are those both DSPs? Will they programmatically execute media buying? Is that what all it takes? Like, one has a UI, like one is, more of an automated engine. Like, are there new DSPs being made? I can't really think of like too many material like ones that certainly at that level recently. So I'm not quite sure what these little containers do, and I think this is sort of definitely a tangent, but I do think it leads to Paul's feeling of like we're all kind of chasing the same pie, and it's just like moving and swirling around. And I think part of the thing that exacerbates that is that you're put into one, you're kind of forced into one of these boxes to say who your competitors are. And there was someone who put something on LinkedIn. And again, this is a personal anecdote from Sincera, and I never met this person. I don't have no idea who they are. And they're like, "Who are Sincera's competitors?" And I was like, "Gee, that's a strange question to ask because like most people, probably including ourselves at the time, would have a hard time describing what Sincera is." And
Right.
so it's like this desire to sort of codify, I think, obfuscates a lot of like the innovation and creativity that happens in the open internet.
I think that that's right. That's right. I'll throw out a thought here again. I think we're off the conference, but that's okay because this is, I want to talk about these ideas as well. I'm going to make a statement. I'd love for you to kind of validate like what are the problems I see with ad tech or in our space, and I think Paul, this goes to your statement and a couple other things, right? Is the barrier to entry is so low that to your point about consolidation, like you could consolidate, but for every consolidation, there are 10 other companies that can pop up, and all they have to do is connect in some way. And the other part of it is our industry does accept charlatans and we have a low barrier of entry and we don't hold high standards. And so there's this aspect that that's, so open marketplace, it's a bazaar. It's literally a just chaos. And so to your point, like Mike, I think that's why someone goes, are you a DMP like Lotame? Right?
Help,
And you go
it's
like,
basically there is a part of that. It's like, help me understand how I should think about you because this is the only frame of reference I have for decoding this bazaar, as you say. Like, I think that's a really good visualization.
yeah. So one other statement that I heard that I really liked, I knew I was going to ponder it later, and I jumped on it was Joe Root from Permutive made this statement that ad tech has an identity problem, publishers don't. And I don't know if I've said that right, and if I don't, then I'll get Joe on here and he can explain it. But it's like this idea that like so much of ad tech runs off of data. And to date, publishers have been said, hey, you don't put enough data into the system. You need to do more. We need this. Oh, you're trying to play with it? You can't do that. And there's this aspect of going probably at some level that you do need to do that, right? I mean, again, standards or whatever, but I found it a statement I knew I was gonna like think about a little bit more because again I'm gonna jump to this. I'm unfortunately one of those conferences and groups that sits there and tries to get publishers to kind of collaborate together that apparently I owe Paul
I was
Bannister
sort of,
$1 million
I
for.
was, referentially, talking about all of us,
That's
you
okay.
certainly have been guilty of that, but I've been guilty of it too.
Well, let's go to the sub-tangent, then we'll come back, which is there is no doubt that in our industry there will be this virtual signaling of trying to help publishers. And just like everything else, and when you read AdExchanger, the first thing you do is read the title, read the author, and then you get to see whether there's this aspect of again, what is the frame of reference, right? And again, that's not bad about AdExchanger. It's just everyone wants to do their opinion. I am betting on publishers. And as I started the conference with, I'm a sucker for doing so, but I'm going down on this ship. This is just my part. Anyway, so my point was, Joe Root, Primitive, says it's ad tech's issue about not having identities. Like they are the ones that need the data, and it's publishers that kind of need to control that. I don't know if either were in the room to hear that. Tell me if I got it wrong. Please tell
I
me.
think you got the
Everybody
gist of it.
wants. Yeah. Go ahead, Mike.
No, I was just saying in the affirmative, I think you have the quote right. I do think what is interesting and something that sort of connected to what you said earlier, just before the Joe, or as a sort of connection to that Joe point, is I think there is this tendency, and I disagree with Chris Kane somewhat on this topic, where it's like, his latest marketecture, like feed DSPs what they want. It's a very seductive thought to be like, if there's only something more I could add to the bid stream, then my monetization will improve. And unfortunately, I just don't think that there is that exists. And I think if you want it to exist, you need to do something about like getting the ecosystem paying attention and understanding the importance of metric X, getting everyone to buy into it, because it's a huge lift for a DSP to listen to one of these new metrics. And then you can put it into the bid stream. So I think in some ways, what bid requests are standardization, right? Sorry to go like somewhat esoteric, but from a publisher's perspective, they are a reduction and a compression of fidelity of like what makes your site unique and awesome and interesting and cool. And I think bid requests, I don't think it's a spoiler, like potentially overflatten that. So if I'm a publisher, it's like, how do I get buyers to care about my fidelity? Maybe it's like, I do my own publisher network and we have like one or two salespeople. And I think, you see some examples of that. Vox and others, I'm not sure how many salespeople they have. They have some new interesting formats. I mean, I think Paul and the team at Rapid do some really interesting things with formats. So to me, I don't think, unfortunately, from a publisher's perspective, it's like, oh, if I just, it's the data. Like, I don't think there's more that you can give. Like, maybe you can add some things that certain buyers are looking for or not, but like, there's not this sort of pot of gold at the end of the more data, into the bid stream. Just like what specifically when people say that, what data are we talking about? Because Permutive has been putting seller-defined audiences. Paul, I know you've been doing the same thing. I don't think it's a crazy thing to say, like, that's not materially impacting ad spend. So like,
Dot,
what's
dot, dot.
the
Yeah.
data?
Very small. Yeah.
Right. I mean, there's
So,
potential there, right? Go ahead, Paul. Please, there's a lot in what Mike just said.
first off, like, I think I've always sort of known this, but like over the last like 6 months, I've like definitely crystallized, and this is very much an example of like the micro affecting the macro, like the importance of the bid request as the it like people have a currency and all this crap, but like the bid request is the currency. And to Mike's point, and to bring it even further, I think but also to bring it in a slightly different direction, I don't know how big an average bid request is, 3K, 4K, something like that, maybe smaller, but it's like a couple thousand bytes. The most important piece of the bid request by an order of magnitude is the buyer UID field. It's where the third-party cookie ID goes. It is 30 bytes. It's a small little thing, but it literally is orders of magnitude more valuable than the next most valuable data point in there. And that is the key on which all transactions, not all, nearly all transactions are based on. Like if that is there, you will make 100. And if it is not there, you will make 30. And like that, like it's as simple as that. And a little bit it is, it's an easy button for the buy side to say, like, I can just look at an ID and then I know who it is, and that makes my life easier. And on the reverse side, if we put a whole bunch more data into the bid request, figured out what the value of it was, communicated to the buy side what it really meant, and had them retool all their systems based on all that data, we could change that. But it's a really freaking high hill to climb to make that possible. I'm like, to some of a lot of this is just inertia and complexity stops it from happening. Not like I think like bad intentions per se or anything.
What's subtle of like, or not subtle, but like what's this very small thing that could have been easily missed is, whilst I agree with everything that Paul said, It also blinded us for what is the other signal in fidelity that could be used to create, a delta in performance, right? Versus like a baseline. And so Brian, again, before the Scope 3 discussion, he put up on the slide, and something that we're working with the Scope 3 team on is like, there are a ton of ad placements out there that are terribly performing ad placements. But if your user ID is on them, historically, that will trigger the bid. That is the lever that decides what's happening. But there's more information now than ever that you can have that's about the bid, whether it's from Sincera or somewhere else entirely. But like, we just know more about what's happening. And necessity is the mother of invention or innovation or both. And so I think, like, the fact that we don't have this user ID for very much longer, Paul will tell us exactly to the minute when it will go away, apparently, based on his forecasting ability. But like, this is going to force us to move in new ways. And I think that's exciting for publishers. Like, we talk a lot about a metric that we call ads to content ratio. And we think this is, and well, we know it's incredibly correlated with performance, right? High ads to content ratio, worse performance. So Rob, if you're like, you know what, I'm going to bundle and put my, myself and my inventory and some other publishers, and we're going to get together and have a consortium of like high fidelity, really great experiences, amazing attention, media that you can buy from us, and you package enough of it such that there's enough for like some decent scale. Like, that's an interesting, innovative idea that I don't think buyers would be open to 24 months ago. And so there is some hope, and there is some
Agreed.
interesting new things that are
I
happening as a result of this.
agree.
Like, no one talked about attention targeting. That's
It
slowly.
creates real opportunities that I think can be gotten ahead of right now. I totally agree with that.
I'm going to add one piece and then we wrap up that I will tell you, Mike, when you talked about the bid request, you had said made this statement in a conversation you and I were having about the bid request being a contract.
I will say, Andrew Casale taught me that, so he
Okay.
deserves credit for it.
We'll give that one to Andrew. I thought about that for days after. And again, there's this aspect of what you just said. And again, I'm going to cut this piece out and I'm going to put it in front of every one of the publishers about the idea how the bid request flattens this, that piece to that contract part. And just so here we are. Here we are talking about these big macro things, right? We started this off with this ad tech economic forum. Gentlemen, we landed on 30 bytes of
3,000
data.
bytes,
Yes, fantastic. Good job, guys.
yeah.
But that gives you the whole thing. That's why you need to have the entire picture. So yeah, I think there's only one final thing to do. And Mike, you didn't know you kind of stole my thunder there. Paul, we do need some predictions. NBA finals, that's coming up, and any other things that you hope or wish for that we can you
And
want to
we
put
also
out?
have predictions on what we think will happen with the sandbox as well, not
Done.
just
Oh
the
yeah,
NBA
that's a whole new podcast. Wow, we gotta start
Finals.
over again.
We can save something for another conversation. So I really do appreciate it, and thank you for coming. I hope to see you at the next event that we do around this. And I also will say, like, this was the intention of this conversation was to help steer that conversation as well as give it the context and all the things that kind of come out of it. So there'll be further conversations. I'll put you both down for Davos in 2025, or wherever we go. And for those of you listening, you didn't get to see Mike's his facial expression change on that. So anyway, guys, thank you so much. I can't wait to see you again and continue these conversations, and we'll go from there. Thanks everyone for listening.
Rob, I would just say really quick before you sign off, thank you for hosting it. And I think the last point I would make for all those people on stage who were saying the open internet was dead, why were they at a conference that was hosted by and discussing primarily the open internet with participants from the open internet with nobody from any of these giant walled gardens? So, like, if the open internet is dead, why are they wasting their time attending this?
Challenge
So,
accepted. We'll add the Whatometer to the next event, and we will throw down the gauntlet on that particular part. I think it's a great point. Paul, Mike, thank you so much.